Welcome to Emerging Experts. In this episode, we are joined by Michael LaPalooza, Hematology and Oncology Fellow at MD Anderson Cancer Center. Thank you so much for joining us.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me. My name is Michael LaPalooza. I'm a first year, soon to be second year, Hematology and Oncology Fellow at MD Anderson. And I'm interested in pursuing a career as a clinical investigator in gastrointestinal cancers.
Wonderful. And to kick off our conversation, can you share with us your journey into the field of oncology?
Yeah, I became interested in oncology as a medical student when, on my internal medicine rotation, I started interacting with patients that had end-of-life problems like cancer. And the interactions I had with them were very, very fulfilling, and it was an absolute privilege to be a part of their care. So I realized that I hadn't done something like that that was so rewarding and gratifying, and being able to help patients in those really, really hard times was something that I appreciated. So that's ended up why I ended up going into oncology.
That's really wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. And what motivated you to specialize in GI cancer specifically?
Yeah, so a little bit later as a resident on the internal medicine wards, on the oncology inpatient service in particular, we deal with a lot of patients with gastrointestinal cancers because they develop a lot of complications from their malignancy or from their therapy or from their surgeries that need to be managed in the hospital. So just by exposure in general, I got to interact with more of them and appreciated that. And also, I think a couple other reasons were that they have a high burden of symptoms related to their cancer and treatment that I think were very rewarding to help try and alleviate, like constipation and nausea and diarrhea, et cetera. And then I thought it was a ripe area for opportunity because a lot of the treatment regimens that are used in some of the gastrointestinal cancers are ones that have not changed in a while. So I thought that it'd be cool to potentially make an impact and try and improve the types of therapies that these patients receive.
That's wonderful. And now I know you're at MD Anderson. So can you describe your role as a fellow there and any projects that you're currently working on?
Yeah, absolutely. Hematology and Oncology Fellowship is 3 years long, and the first 18 months in our fellowship are primarily clinical, where we rotate through at a month at a time different sort of cancers. So, for example, 1 month we might do breast, the next month we might do leukemia, and get a really, really deep dive and exposure into each of those different subspecialties. After that, we'd spend most of our time doing research and then have the opportunity to go to any particular clinics that we think would be helpful for us in the future. Some current things that I'm working on are kind of twofold. One is to try and understand the role of circulating tumor DNA in the prognostication, but also for prediction of which patients are likely to respond to which therapies. And the second projects I'm working on revolve around trying to understand why some patients with microsatellite instability high deficient mismatch repair colorectal cancer do or do not respond to immunotherapy.
That's interesting. And then off of that, just what do you hope are the outcomes of these research, and how do you hope this kind of influences the field moving forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I think circulating tumor DNA in particular is a really promising tool. And I think there are several ongoing studies and several that have recently come out that show that it might have an impact in stratifying patients in terms of how high of a risk they are at recurrence, particularly in the adjuvant setting after surgery in patients with colon and rectal cancer. I think fleshing that out and also seeing whether or not circulating tumor DNA has a role in the neoadjuvant setting, so before surgery, to determine how long patients should be on any sort of neoadjuvant therapy that they might receive, respective of what type of cancer they have, would be important to help minimize any toxicity that might preclude them from getting a surgery that they need.
Definitely. I know there was a lot of interesting information this January on the circulating tumor DNA, so it'll be exciting to see what else you come up with. Thank you for sharing that. And I guess just what are some of the most promising advances in targeted therapies in the GI space that you've seen or been a part of?
Yeah, I think gastrointestinal cancers are ripe for targeted therapies because, like I said, most of them have been types of cancers that have been treated traditionally with cytotoxic chemotherapy for a long period of time. And I think antibody drug conjugates are always something that are exciting. I remember my first ASCO was the one where they presented how effective in HER2 was in HER2 low cancers, breast cancer specifically. I think in addition to antibody drug conjugates, I think bispecific antibodies are another thing that are really important, trying to really deliver the therapy that is going to have an effect at the site of the tumor rather than affecting all the different types of organs that lead to side effects related to that are similar to what is seen in chemotherapy. I think those types of therapies in particular, I think, have a lot of promise.
Definitely. And how do you see the future of targeted therapies evolving in cancer treatment?
Yeah, I think making sure that each patient gets the particular type of therapy that fits their tumor's biology and who they are as a person is going to be where we head next. And I think one of the challenges with that is going to be trying to make sure that these therapies that I hope are extremely successful and not very toxic into the community, where a lot of times they might not have the smaller community centers might not have the expertise in dealing with some of the toxicities that might be unforeseen with some of these therapies, but also making sure that they can be affordable and equitably distributed to areas that might not have the resources to set up the infrastructure to administer them.
And what are some of the challenges faced by researchers and clinicians in the GI space?
I think one of the most pressing matters right now is, and something that has been in the media quite a bit recently, is the rising incidence of colon and rectal cancers in patients that are younger than 45 or 50 years old. There's a lot of very interesting and plausible kind of hypotheses as to why that's happening. But so far as I know, there's not been anything that they've been able to specifically point out that has caused that rise in incidence over the past 20 years or so. So I think every person who treats patients with cancer is heartbroken when they see young people presenting to their clinic with advanced stage disease. So this is an area that urgently needs to be addressed.
What are some of the screening options available for patients, and what is kind of just the importance of getting screened early?
Yeah, so currently the USPSTF recommends people that are 45 get their first screening colonoscopy if they don't have any other risk factors or family history of colon cancer. If people have a family history of colon cancer, it's extremely colon and rectal cancer, it's ex extremely important that they talk with their doctor about how soon they should be screened, whether it be younger than 45 or not. And any symptoms that could be related to colon and rectal cancer, such as bleeding in the stool, dark red blood, constipation, or diarrhea that is abnormal for that particular person, should be absolutely talked about with their primary doctor to see if they should get a colonoscopy.
Yes, that definitely makes sense. Thank you so much for sharing that. And what advice would you have for younger medical professionals interested in pursuing a career in oncology?
I think making sure that they're reaching out to people who are in the oncology space to get a sense of what they like and don't like about their job is extremely important. The role of mentors and sponsors in this journey is, I could speak about that for hours, but it's extremely, extremely important. One, the mentors can provide opportunities and advice into what might and might not be a good fit for that particular mentee, based on their career interests, based on how they know them as a person. So reaching out to people that you know and trust who are in the oncology space would be a good first step. And then sponsors, I think, are people kind of who offer opportunities and introduce you to people who might be able to advance your career in other ways. Both of them have an extremely important role in trainees' success. So I think establishing a really strong network of mentors and sponsors is something that's incredibly important.
That's really great advice. And just kind of off of that, how do you see the role of education and mentorship shape the next generation of oncologists?
Yeah, I think oncology is changing so fast, and so many, and I'm glad that this is the case, but so many new modalities of therapy and different diagnostic tools are making their way into practice. So I think that the training is, for lack of a better term, getting a little bit siloed, but making sure that people are exposed to a wide breadth of different types of diseases in their training, I think, is extremely important. And I think that most programs offer the opportunity to get that exposure, something that's kind of, I think, tempting, I think, for early fellows and residents even, is that they want to get super hyper focused on one particular area of cancer research. And I think that has a role, but making sure that you know how to work up and treat other types of malignancies too, I think, is important, because you might gain different pearls from treating those different from treating patients with those different type of malignancies that you could apply to your main field of interest. And there's a lot of overlap that sometimes goes unnoticed. So getting a really broad exposure to cancer, I think, is an important part of training.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. And for you specifically, are there any mentors who significantly impacted your career?
Absolutely. Someone who has been both a mentor and sponsor for me, and I cannot thank and appreciate enough for all they've done for me, it was Dr. Kathy Eng, who's the lead of the gastrointestinal oncology group at Vanderbilt Ingram Cancer Center. She and everyone that knows her, I think, would say the same thing. She has a really broad cohort of mentees that she's helped bring up over the years, and all of them are extremely grateful to her for their mentorship and for her leadership in gastrointestinal cancers as a whole. And then here at MD Anderson, I have a few different mentors. It's not been a year yet, but I've been lucky to develop a network here with Dr. Kasib, who runs the HCC program for medical oncology here, and I rotate in his clinic every Thursday morning. And then Dr. Scott Kopetz and Dr. Van Morris have been incredible mentors, providing opportunities for research in colorectal cancer. Dr. Overman is another one, and I could go on, but this has been a place that there are no shortage of mentors, and I'm very grateful for that.
That's wonderful. It's amazing to see that support and all of those people. But I guess for the future, what are your hopes and aspirations moving forward?
Yeah, like I said, I hope to lead clinical trials for patients with gastrointestinal cancers to help them live longer and better. And then I think in the longer term, I think kind of making sure that these therapies that I think are going to come and hopefully be extremely efficacious and not that toxic are able to be administered in the community where they're currently not able to be administered due to lack of infrastructure, lack of nursing expertise, lack of oncologist expertise, lack of resources are able to be given. And I don't know necessarily the best way to do that yet, but I'm hoping to learn whether that be at a leadership level in one of these local cancer centers, in cooperative groups that are responsible for administering trials, led by investigators, or at the level of a government kind of entity that would be able to provide oversight to make sure that these trials are administered in a safe way in these community settings.
Wonderful. Well, good luck with all of that. It's amazing. And is there anything else that you'd like to share with our audience to conclude the conversation, especially to those who are other emerging experts in the field?
I think making sure that you never forget why you entered this field is extremely important, and obviously that's taking care of patients and making sure that you're doing the right thing by them. One thing that I've read about and kind of think about as I start my own continuity clinic in about a month or two is something called the MOM test, where when you have a patient, you always try and think, is this what I would recommend for my mom? So that's I think something that will serve everyone well when they're treating patients with cancer, because everyone would obviously want what's best for their mom and should do so the same when they treat their patients.
For more updates on the latest news and trends in oncology, be sure to visit www.targetedonc.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. You can also find us across social media platforms. Follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, at Targeted Onc, and on Instagram, Threads, Facebook, and LinkedIn at Targeted Oncology. See you next time.